Hello and welcome to Charting Change in Legal. I'm Caroline Hill. I'm Editor-in-Chief of Legal IT Insider, and I'm here today with my very esteemed colleague,
Esteemed
Ari
colleague.
Kaplan.
Wow. I don't need Ari. Hi everyone. I'm Ari Kaplan, an analyst that covers legal, and it as always is a privilege to speak with you, Carolyn. Thank you.
Thanks so much. It's been how's the week been? How's your couple of weeks? It's been a couple of weeks since we've
It's
spoken.
been very good. I have been in the throes of finishing three different research reports. My eDiscovery Unfiltered research is coming out. I have a report that will be coming out for the ALA conference at the end of May, and a research that'll be coming out at CLOC next week. So, speaking to different constituencies, eDiscovery decision makers, law firm leaders, and corporate legal operations directors. So, very a really interesting way to compare what's happening in different sectors. And of course, AI came up a lot, but it was much more about processes and change management and trying to gauge whether this will be a better economic year and where firms are headed and how their clients are viewing what they're doing. It's just super interesting. So I feel very lucky to do the work that I do.
Gosh, that's a busy that's so they're very different, right? So the first one is eDiscovery, and they're all separate, completely separate topics, right?
Right. I mean, the first one is essentially a report where I conduct market research to try to understand what people think of specific companies so that I can share that information with those companies so that they can determine where there are market share opportunities, where there are challenges that they need to address, what's happening in their competitive landscape. And then I ask about specific trends in the space, but unique to those leaders. However, eDiscovery is often the foundation of a lot of this innovation. It's a lot of knowledge management, a lot of change. eDiscovery has been using AI for over a decade. It's perfectly accepted in the courts. There's a tremendous understanding. In fact, a lot of the AI discussions grow from the success that's occurred in eDiscovery. So it's great that this is the 10th year I'm doing that research, but I also had the privilege of doing some other work more generally focused on law firms and law departments.
That so Joy Heath Rush at ILTA a while
Yeah.
ago said to me at the end of the year when I was doing a kind of what do you think of the past year and what have we learned, and she said, I think we should be tapping more into the e-discovery sector in terms of helping us to move forward with Gen AI and leverage some of their understanding around TAR. I think you and I may have talked about this in the past, but I'd be curious as to whether that is happening or whether everyone's just sort of staying in their lane, and whether eDiscovery will continue to be pushing the boundaries more than others, or whether actually it's sort of evening the field a lot more. eDiscovery's always been further ahead. They were doing stuff that contracts weren't doing. I'd be curious to see. Did you get any sense of that, or not really from the research?
What I find ironic is that eDiscovery has always been advanced in terms of the technology, the processes, the talent, but has often sat behind the glamour because the work itself is very methodical. It was almost like legal tech, right? I've been writing about legal tech since the late 90s, and legal tech was super uninteresting and boring to most people for, a decade and a half or something. It's only recently, last 10 years, last 8 years, the money came in, lots of exciting stories. So legal tech is the coolest thing ever. It's global. People want to just go right from law school into a legal tech career. That's not what it was like for a long time. It was very obscure, and it was dominated by very basic tools that could be transformative: billing tools, document management tool, matter management tools. It wasn't the sort of, oh, AI will change everything kind of application. Those were incredibly valuable. Practice management, all of those tools, super valuable. They've had tremendous staying power. They are at the core of a firm's technology portfolio. But there was not a lot of excitement about it. eDiscovery, the same thing. Super. I love the eDiscovery community. I feel lucky to be part of it. Super interesting people, fascinating. I think it's almost like the best kept secret. It's out now. And so I think that, yes, it's always been at the forefront. And now you see the leaders in eDiscovery, which I think is incredibly fun. I see my peers who have been toiling away learning and working and applying and just serving clients in the most dynamic way. And all of a sudden, they're going from, head of e-discovery to head of innovation, or head of innovation and legal operations, or head of transformation, artificial intelligence leader. You're starting to really see a recognition that this field served as such a core foundation for what's to come, that that talent and that technology and that understanding that needs to be tapped. People are starting to also think, how can I take my e-discovery technology and apply it more broadly? Why am I not using it in other ways? And so, luckily, the research will show some of that and tell that story if I do it a good enough job. But
I'm sure you do a
I'm yeah, no,
fantastic job,
I'm
Ari.
excited. I'm excited
I'm not
to talk to people
surprised.
about it.
That's cool. I mean, I've always wondered why it's not broader. I mean, there are companies like Luminance, for example, where they've gone to both sides of the coin. They start off in e-discovery and then they move into contracts, right? And it's just a case of, but yeah, it's surprising that you don't have more companies doing that. But yeah, in terms of the legal tech not being cool, yeah, it's quite funny. It still makes me laugh a lot when everybody wants to talk to you about it. And I spoke to a friend of mine from school who's a law professor, and she's saying, "Oh, hey, everybody wants to talk about it. What can we do?" And I'm just like, this is so different to when I started out in journalism, and even trying to have a conversation with someone about technology, they just were like, "Oh, I don't think
You know,
so."
I have always loved it. I've always appreciated it. I started writing about technology in, I was writing about international trade because that's where I started my practice of law. When I started in practice, I started doing international trade and was writing about, the importation of Chinese wood. And then I approached my boss at the time, the partner I worked with, and I said, I've been reading a lot about this internet. We should write about that. I mean, that seems super interesting in comparison to whether some, the tariff schedule shows a plastic at this level or that level. And he's like, yeah, if you want to do that, he was a wonderful man. He's like, he is a wonderful man. He's retired, but he said, if you want to do that, that's fine, as long as we can do our thing. And he gave me the freedom to, so I was writing about technology before I was writing about legal tech. And then all of a sudden someone was like, well, look, a lawyer that's interested in technology, there's got to be the application of technology and the law that would make sense for this person to combine that. And that was really, and then, I developed lots of friendships at ALM and they gave me lots of opportunities, which was wonderful of them. So I just think that it's funny. It reminds me, can I just tell you a story? So when I was a kid, so I'm an Eagle Scout. I don't know, that doesn't mean anything in the UK, but in the US, it means something. It's some sort of milestone. And I was a Boy Scout growing up in Brooklyn, New York. And in Brooklyn, New York, walking around in a Boy Scout uniform, particularly in the neighborhood I grew up in, was not particularly cool, and you wouldn't do it that much. And so you'd wear like maybe underneath your clothes if you had to go to a meeting. I had this uniform, which I still have, by the way. I bust it out sometimes for Halloween. My kids love that. They're like, "You are so uncool." And anyway, so I feel like legal tech was like that. It was like, "Oh, I'm writing about this awesome article for Wired magazine about trans, like the Electronic Frontier Foundation." And also I wrote this piece about, case management over here. And so it's like my Boy Scouts were underneath my clothing. And so, but now it's like, what, look at me, Eagle Scout. And you just, write about it, talk about it. It's conferences all over the world. It's just fascinating to me. I think it's super cool. Why not?
It's so cool. It's so
Yep.
cool. And you see all like loads of managing partners and senior partners and all the people that previously be like, that is some back office boring stuff. And then now obviously this is the good thing about Gen AI, I think it's been progressively more technology's been progressively more a boardroom conversation
Right.
over the years, right? From when I started being a journalist in 2004. It's progressively moved to become more of a exec committee boardroom conversation, but I think the last year or so has accelerated that beyond all expectation in terms of suddenly now they're all involved in that conversation, which is super cool. It's not as cool as your Boy Scout uniform story.
Not nearly as cool as that story.
But it's super cool. And for the people who like the CIOs and I think it's I think it's really important. I think that there's still, though, funnily enough, there's still like cultural, I don't know. I think that I was speaking to somebody the other day, David Turner. He's just taken over as CTO of Herbert Smith Freehills. He's based in Sydney, and he's now, I said, what are your focuses for the first little while? And he's so it's interesting because it's about globalization. He wants to truly globalize the IT function, but also very much an emphasis on culture and on being part of the conversation, being a part of the sort of conversation at that executive level. And he was saying that, he's been involved outside of legal in financial services, and he's been in legal for quite some time now, actually, but he's saying, he's still got that reflection on how IT just has to work, and how, you don't think of it in terms of sort of when you have downtime, you think of it as, he's now trying to encourage people to think of it as lost billable hours, right? So, or lost billable minutes, hopefully not hours. And thinking in terms of so that whole cultural shift of thinking it in a management type way, right? So actually it's a responsibility of the management to think about tech, but also the responsibility of IT and the tech people to start thinking in the way that an exec would, right? So it's kind of a two-way shift.
I have recently finished a report. I interviewed a cross-section of COOs, CIOs, and some executive directors at mid-sized law firms. And what's interesting is the sort of the arc of the conversation was about using technology. What's optimal? How much technology does your firm use? Do they use most of what you provide them, or are they just opening and closing a document and the rest of the portfolio is relegated to a handful of people that really need it? What's optimal? Are you automating? How much are you automating? And what's interesting, I find, is that all of these discussions involve change and the reluctance to change and the need to find champions. And the conversations tend to have these recurring themes. However, at the end of the day, a lot of the leaders in technology are really trying to figure out a formula so that they don't even have to address change management, that they can just switch something and it sort of magically happens on its own. So you don't have to worry about people doing something differently because it will be as automated as they can possibly make it. And then as that conversation progresses, it's sort of like, well, we need to also maintain the human connection. And so it's a really funny conversation. It's a much more cultural nuance in a law department and a law firm. It's the same because the law department is serving the business and they want to make sure that they show all of their importance, and especially because they tend to be a call center, and so they want to have that personal relationship. They want to, we serve you, we know you, we know your business well. You can't just do this with a bot. And the same thing in a law firm. A law firm is, realizes, look, we'd love to get as much done as possible. There are risk management benefits. There are benefits in terms of compliance with our policies. There are benefits in terms of not making mistakes or following protocols because it's all automated. And a lot of the standard tools or the most popular tools are starting to build this functionality in terms of email triaging or document creation and other things. And so it's just a funny moment I feel like we're in. There's this focus both on getting people to change, to use the tools, to take greater advantage of the tools, and then also to sort of figure out a way to graduate to a point where they don't have to do anything. It'll be done for them, and the system will just work, and they can just absolutely focus. It's just an interesting time. I feel like we're at like a wonderful watershed moment.
I do. I think I agree. I do think that probably expectation is interesting as to, do you know what would be a great bit of research? I don't know how you would do this, but this sounds like a you thing already. Like, where are we in terms of expectation versus reality? Maybe to a certain extent your reports already cover this. Like, but I feel like right now, there's so many people that are expecting, like, it's an interesting point you make about we don't have to do anything. I think that there are quite a lot of people who are thinking, oh yeah, we don't have to, we're not going to have to do anything, right? It's just going to do all of this stuff, and we're going to, and I think that there's some elements of that, but a lot of the time you will need humans in the loop. I think for some people that would be reassuring, right? They're worried about their futures. I think that we're in this really weird transition period where people are either, they're hopeful that IT will do everything, or they're really nervous about what's going to happen to their job, and I think that it'd be really interesting to have a bit of research just to show where we're sitting. I know Gartner to a certain extent do this, in terms of their hype, etc. But it'd be great to do like a legal sector specific report talking about, where we are in terms of expectation versus reality.
Also, the issue is really fundamental. If you have technology that can do so many things, it changes mentoring, it changes training. You don't need to be in the same place as anyone at the same time. We're already seeing this, and it's only getting more complicated. As people become more comfortable, not necessarily being in the same place at the same time, it just gets complicated. Although I will say that I work at a global firm, and there was a partner I worked with in DC, and a partner in Chicago, and a partner in New York, and a partner in other places. And it just, the team functioned great. You know, we all focused on what the work that we needed to do. It's not that different than if you were working remotely. I guess that's the argument. It's like, well, I've worked with someone in Chicago every day and someone in LA and Miami. They're not here. So what's the difference if I'm working in the office or I'm working at home? Those people are not where I am. Why should wait? So I totally get that, but the issue is this commitment to training and learning and development, which needs to stay at a premium because that's the way the profession proliferates.
Yeah, I'm going to do a webinar soon on this whole, where are we at with, are we back, are we moving, is everyone comfortable doing where they are, working from home, or are we going back to the office? There's all these firms that are tying bonuses to how many days you're in the office. Some people are doing 4 days, and I do think that, I'm not sure where everyone's at with it right now, and I think that, I do think that we just, if you can, you've the value of face to face and the productivity of face to face is greater. But like you said, you've had global teams for a long time. And actually, I think if you measure, I mean, I have so many conflicting thoughts about this actually, because I suppose it depends what type of work you're doing. But if you measure by output, then and that can work really well, right? You do, this is the goal, this is, and you know who's doing what. I do think that lots of firms are still suffering from not having any kind of task management, like no visibility of who's doing what. That to me is kind of just completely nuts. But yeah, it's kind of fascinating. We sort of I think that we're back to having flux. I'm not sure. I don't know whether we'll ever be at this position where it'll just be like, this is what people do. Do you know what I
If
mean? Like this.
somebody told me, I always say that if somebody told me when I was practicing, and I practiced from 97 to 2006. So if somebody told me when I was practicing that my firm would let me work 4 days a week in the office and I could work remotely the other day or two or three, frankly, I would have thought it was the greatest firm on earth. I loved it, and I worked every day in the week, on the weekends. Like I thought it was a great, very fortunate opportunity to get to work for that firm. And the fact that we worked hard and put in a lot of hours, I don't think there was a change in expectations over time. We knew that was the requirement. Like the expectation was you worked hard, they paid you well. So I've always, just thought of that. And I don't think it's, sometimes I don't think it's, if the flip side is, oh, well, I can work even more remotely. I don't know, that's a healthy, you gotta have some time away. It's better to, so that's why I'm a big process guy. Like I always think that if you can build your processes better, it'll free up people so that they'll return refreshed and interested and eager, as opposed to drain them. That's a hard cycle to sustain. And I obviously I'm glad I'm not on that side of having to deal with that, but you have a lot of different talent at a law firm today. Just an incredible number of roles, unique positions, and people who are you just solely focused on innovation or solely focused now. You see their new roles and chief AI officer, solely dedicated to a certain discipline that will drive the firm forward. It'll be interesting to see, what those roles end up producing and what the success factors are of the firms that engage people in those roles.
Yeah, it's funny because so our biggest story on LinkedIn in terms of the number of hits was
Was the 1000th episode of the virtual lunch?
it was not that, but
No, man, never
it should
is.
have been. It should have
Darn,
been.
it should
It
have
was
been. Wow.
John Scrutato being appointed as Latham's director of AI. I think I've got his title right. And yeah, it's, I mean, by a country mile, got, a load of hits. And people are sort of speculating now as to whether that is going to be a thing. And I spoke to, it was actually off the record, so I can't say who it was, but I spoke to somebody at another big US firm who said, where everyone's going to go that way. So I was just trying to remember. So it was the DOJ. The DOJ started this. They appointed a C-suite AI person, I guess chief of AI must have been. And then somebody from one of the big US firms said, "Oh, everybody's going to go that way." And then Latham's just appointed John as head of AI. And it's quite interesting because, so the forecast in the US seems to be, yeah, that's the way that people are now thinking. I've spoken to a couple of people in the UK who said, we don't need that. That would be another C-suite person who ends up falling by the wayside, because actually it should be either the head of innovation or the head of IT, or those two preferably working together. We don't need a head of AI. So it's just,
Chief Knowledge Management Officer.
or knowledge, right? They said, we've
Right.
got enough. They said, and this is with no disrespect to anybody who's been appointed, but they said, we have those functional heads already to be able to be to take care of that. And actually, by introducing another layer, that could be also adding a layer of inefficiency. But so it's quite divisive, and this sort of new role is quite divisive.
On the virtual lunch the other day, we were interviewing one of the leaders of in our community, and they said something I thought was very interesting. And it said, we are like their impression was that the younger generation is losing its ability to solve problems. And I think this when firms create new, fairly undefined roles, it seems it's up to the leader in the same way that being in knowledge management 20 years ago was up to that person to determine where they could add the most value and how many places they could contribute some ideas to raise the caliber of the firm. And then it happened with innovation because that was sort of the next iteration of what that leadership role looked like. I think that it will be up to talented folks like John and others who take that, assume that position to say, well, the difference here is I can help do this, and I can also supplement what you're doing here and also draw from where you've built so that I can shine a light on what the other teams are doing that's so effective and helpful for the firm. But you're right. I think it could be an opportunity, and it could be a challenge that goes the other way. But my sense is that the people who are lucky enough to get those roles will really have a lot of green space to shape it, but also use it in a way that is a platform for the firm to transform. And you know what's funny is that I'm just thinking of as I'm finishing one of these reports, whenever I ask about transformation, it always ends up going back to the billable hour. You know, it's like nothing changes without the billable hour changing. And then they're like, but that's not changing. So I guess nothing's changing. And it's just this super interesting conversation that I feel like is going on, and it's sort of circular. It's
I
like
love
we're
it
gonna
when it comes up at a conference, and which it did at, I was at Future Lawyer Week UK. I spoke there the other day, and there was some conversation about, will the billable hour come, will we there'll be an end, and then everyone just starts laughing. Literally everyone just started laughing. It was really funny because it's like, we've had this conversation. If anything can get rid of it, it probably is Gen AI. It probably is this huge transformation that's going to need to take place over the next little while. So maybe we have drawn significantly closer already, but it is quite funny. Everyone just laughs and goes, well, we've had this conversation.
Well, I made a joke once at a conference. It was at Relativity Fest, and I made a joke that they said, "What's the?" They had like a round robin, and each of the panelists, it was a big panel, and it was like this fun discussion. And they said, "What do you think is the biggest issue happening in e-discovery? And what do you think the biggest issue is happening?" And people are like, "Oh, it's spoliation, and it's technology-assisted review." And they came to me, and I was just like, "I think it's the hyphen." And everyone's like, the hyphen. And I was like, what? And then everyone started laughing because I meant, the hyphen between the E and the discovery. And, and everyone's like, that's true. The hyphen is a big E. Why is there a hyphen? And I was like, oh my God, I was totally kidding. Like, I was not being substantive here. There are a lot of smart people here. I was just trying to counter their brilliance with a nonsense comment that I thought was kind of funny. You guys have like really read into it. It became like a thing that the hyphen and the e-discovery and the subtle changes that people started like extrapolating. Well, I think he means that you need to have it defined. And I was just like, no, I was just being I needed to have something. But the thing I think about the Bill Lauer is you could at any point, just like you could clickbait any article and add generative AI to it. It'd just be like, oh, I had a wonderful opportunity to speak about, the changing nature of law firms with generative AI. Boom. That's going to definitely be, look, I have a podcast I post twice a week. The episodes where there's generative AI or AI or something like that, they do better.
Yeah,
And they're
we've done webinars. We had a webinar once quite early doors where we had to. We didn't in the end. We nearly had to extend our Zoom license because we had so many people signing up. Because it was one of the earliest Gen AI
Yeah.
webinars. It was so funny. We were like, everybody wanted to just be on it. And even now, yeah, 100%. If I do a webinar about Gen AI, it's
That should be in the contract. If we need to extend the Zoom license, that's a bonus. Bonus for sure. I would give you a bonus. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
I think, do you know what? It's been such a pleasure chatting with you.
It is
And
always a pleasure.
I like the fact that we always end up on something sensible that people could take away, like a key to the
The bone and a bonus. If you have to expand your Zoom license, get a bonus. So I will look forward to catching up with you next time. In the next episode, we'll talk about clock. That's
Yes.
exciting. And we'll talk
You've
about
got all
the Association of Legal Administrators Conference.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of events. Spring is
Yeah.
here. I'm excited to continue our discussions. Carolyn
Yeah.
Hill, thank you very much.
All right. Nice chatting with you. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.